Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. And I'm here this week to talk with a few other people that have actually done a podcast. You know, we usually don't get other podcasters on our podcast, and this is a very special time. So I want to bring on my co-host, Greg Tyler.
Howdy, everybody. Great to be here as always.
And we have a very special podcast this week, Greg.
Yeah, this will be a lot of fun. We're going to be chatting with the hosts of Geeks of the Galaxy.
That's right. So I want to bring them on right now and just start jamming with it, okay?
Absolutely.
All right, from Geeks of the Galaxy, we have Joshua J. and Matt Solis.
Hello.
Hey, everybody.
Born Blazing Podcast.
All right.
All right, so everybody knows you by your voice. Which one is Josh?
I'm Josh.
And which one is Matt?
I'm Matt.
Okay, so now we know you by your voice.
And Matt's got a little more snark in his voice than I do.
Do I?
You do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the sarcastic one is Matt.
Yes.
And the serious one is Josh. Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Now, which one is the cool one? Or are you both cool?
I'm cool in my love of the 1980s and my multiple references I make. And Matt's cool in his love of Godzilla.
Yeah, that's true.
Awesome. On both counts.
Yes, of course.
I love giant robots. Matt loves giant monsters. So it's a nice pairing.
We somehow get along.
Yeah.
So where do you guys operate out of?
We're actually travel by podcast. We used to have a studio that we worked out of in Whittier, but now we just kind of travel to wherever the guest wants us.
Well, how do you do that?
We just load all of our gear into Matt's car and pretty much just drive where the guest wants us to go.
Nice.
Now, is it guests all around the United States or just in your state?
Just in California here. So we pretty much drive up and down California.
We haven't done out of state just yet.
So. Yeah, not yet. We're hoping to.
Okay, and how long have you guys been doing the podcast?
3 years?
Three? I thought it was 2 years.
Well, 2 years Geeks of the Galaxy, 1 year Full Stream Radio, which is our previous show.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't talk about Full Stream.
Okay. Okay, we won't talk about it then.
So you guys have been around about as long as this podcast has been around.
Oh, nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, we started in December of 2013.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember the exact date you started?
I think that's actually when we
met. When we met Matt was when I met Matt here was December 2013 of at a Christmas party, no less.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's how you guys met at a Christmas party?
Yeah. It was a friend of ours who we used to do the original show with and who's no longer doing the show with us. And I was like, hey, guys, you want to do a podcast? And we're like, oh, yeah, sure. Let's do it. That'd be fun. So the first show we did was pretty much just movie reviews. And then that got old real fast.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, Matt, let's do something else since there's about 10,000 other movie review podcasts out there. So what do you say we just change it up a bit? And he's like, okay.
So that was the impetus for changing it up is that there's so many more podcasts out there that do movie reviews.
Yeah, I really wanted to do something somewhat original because, like I said, there's so many other geeky, nerdy movie review shows out there. I'm like, what's one more in the long list of them?
And it got bored reviewing like a movie after movie after movie, especially when it's like the new movies that were kind of crappy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We gave our old host one movie, one time we let him pick. So, and he picked Divergent.
Oh, no.
How do you decide which content you're going to have on each show?
Matt and I usually will meet like once a week before show day and we'll kind of decide what we want to do, what guest games we want to play. We have a lot of guests. I really enjoy the two-person guest dynamic because it allows us to just meet people and interact with people we normally wouldn't. So the show opens a lot of doors for us to meet like actors and cosplayers and things like that.
And being in California, you get close to those people all the time, right?
Yeah. No, we go to LA more than I normally would just for funsies. So yeah, no, it's great. We go all the way up to, I think LA is probably the farthest we've gone. And I think the farthest south we've gone is like San Diego.
That's basically our main two hubs, either San Diego or LA, seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who would you say are some of your more standout guests that you've had?
Well, let's see. We've had the cast from the Once Upon a Time rock opera on several times. They're a lot of fun. There's multiple talented group of people. We love having them on. We've had
The Blue Power Ranger from Turbo.
Yeah, we've had the Blue Turbo Power Ranger on, Blake Foster. He was really cool. We had him for like 30 minutes, so that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of cosplayers on.
Musicians.
Writers. John Mahal, he's a really good writer, really good friend of the show, so we've had him on.
When it comes to the discussions that you've had on the podcast, are there any discussions that you've had that really stand out as some of your favorites?
Jeez.
I want to say with one of our cosplayers, Loki Hates You, like he really, really hates Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and went like on a, I want to say a 20-minute tirade to where we're just like, we should stop him, but this is way too entertaining.
Yeah, it was. It was hilarious.
It's like him summing up like 2 or 3 like years of like horrible, horrible show. Just like, and they did this and they're failing at this. Ah, we're like,
wow.
Yeah, it's either that or his one man show he did of Flash and Arrow.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that was really entertaining to watch. I've never seen a one man show of Flash and Arrow together, so that was quite amusing.
That's cool.
It goes along with whatever the guest kind of brings to the show, whatever they're plugging at the time or whatever they're doing. We're really like, wow, that's really amazing. What else you got? You know?
Yeah. Although I remember you and I think Andrea from Once Upon a Time, the rock opera, had a huge debate slash argument over Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
Wow.
All of us, the rest of us there were like, what's going on? What's happening?
Oh, God. Yeah, that's probably one of my favorite discussions. Yeah, Andrea, she's the producer of the Once Upon a Time rock opera, and she's a big Star Trek Voyager fan. I am not. I like Star Trek, but that's probably my least favorite of the series, and she's defending it like tooth and nail. And I was like, but she got the ship lost for 6 years. How can you defend that? They let her drive one time, and the ship gets lost for 6 seasons. And they had to bring in Jerry Ryan to save ratings. I was like, your argument is invalid.
Well, for me, the Jerry Ryan thing worked.
Oh, no, exactly. That's the thing.
I know about Jerry Ryan. I've never seen the show before.
Well, everybody knows about Jerry Ryan.
What about you, Greg? Out of all the Star Treks, you're a big Star Trek fan.
Yes, I am.
Where does Voyager fall in?
Voyager is near the bottom for me.
Okay.
So I came aboard the Trek thing with The Next Generation, went back to the original series. It is now my favorite series. I love DS9. Voyager, I stuck with it for about 3.5 seasons. A little after 7 of 9 came aboard. Kept waiting for it to get good. It never did, so I bailed. Enterprise came along. I watched the first half season and bailed. And that's pretty much it. I do like the newer movies, though, for the most part. They're good popcorn viewing.
Okay.
Yeah. No, they're fun.
They're fun to watch.
Yeah, no, they're entertaining. I like Extreme Trek.
Yeah.
So you guys have had all different kinds of genres on your... You've had the comedy, the fantasy, the sci-fi, the horror.
Mm-hmm.
Which of your favorite genres do you like to talk about?
That's tough.
Yeah, that really is.
I mean, where do you categorize? I mean, I guess Godzilla is...
Fantasy, right?
More horror or sci-fi, depending on the movie?
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, a little bit. And then our superheroes are kind of sci-fi-ish?
Yeah, I'd say probably fantasy and sci-fi are probably up there, even though Matt doesn't like sci-fi that much.
You mean fantasy?
Sci-fi fantasy, yeah, sci-fantasy.
Yeah. So we're certainly in that wheelhouse with Voltron.
Oh, yeah. I've loved Voltron since I was 4 years old, and it was my favorite. It was like my introduction cartoon to animation and Japanimation. So I love the theme music because it was that really cool orchestral synthesizer mix. And then you have, you know, the five of them saying, "Go Voltron Force" together. And it was awesome. So
yep.
Loved it.
So why don't we tell everybody how we met, Josh?
Yeah, I was at WonderCon dressed as Luigi of all characters because I love Luigi. And then I see this really amazing Voltron shirt. And I'm like, my first thought is, where do I get one? And the second thing he was like, I come up to you. And I'm like, dude, I love your shirt. And I'm like, oh, I host this podcast. And he's like, I want to be on your show. I love Voltron. Put me on your show. I don't care. Let's talk the show, please.
So he's talking about the Voltron jersey.
So that was really cool. And I still want to know where I can get one of those shirts.
Right. The Voltron jersey you can get at Voltron.com.
Yep.
So if you go to store.voltron.com, you can pick up a Voltron jersey. And I think right now they might have Voltron jersey 2.0, which has the gold lettering on it.
Ooh, that's amazing. Matt here keeps talking about getting me a Voltron Funko at some point. So I'm like, sweet.
It's going to happen.
Bank on it. It's awesome.
That's number 70.
Sweet.
See, there you go.
I haven't been able to find one, though. Are they rare?
I saw them at several Toys R Us stores.
Yeah, in store.
Several months ago, but I've not seen
it. Oh,
them
maybe
since.
That's it then.
All right, Matt, to Toys R Us after I get paid.
I even saw it in a games machine, like at a Dave and Buster's.
Oh, nice. So
it was one of those things that you have to push it out to be able to win it.
Huh, or, you know, just break the glass and take it.
Yeah, you know, I always loved the Lions. I was never a big fan of the vehicle one. I thought it was kind of cool, but I was like, nah, it doesn't hold a candle to the Lions.
Yeah, I like both, but there's definitely a higher barrier to entry for the vehicle guys. They came at it from a disadvantage. The Lions were just so cool. It's really kind of hard to shift from the Lions to the vehicles and just, you know, just take it all in at the same level of enthusiasm.
Have you started with the original Voltron series, or where did you start with Voltron?
Oh, me, I started with the original way back in 84 when they first did it, and then that kind of transitioned my love of Japanimation into like Transformers and Robotech and all those shows, and even GoBots I thought was entertaining.
Awesome.
Have you seen the Robot Chicken sketch with Scooter?
Yes.
Yes, I have. And the Voltron dance-off, which was great. Voltron Force, we just got served!
Damn!
Great.
Yeah, the Vehicle Voltron sketch is really nice, too.
Oh, where it takes like 30 minutes to like complete all, the entire robot?
Voltron will come! I promise you, Voltron will come!
And they don't even get it right the first time.
You gotta think about it from a toys perspective, too. Yeah. Like with the lions, you had like just five lions to put together. With the vehicle one, you're like, okay, this one goes here, and this one goes here, but if I don't have this side, if I don't have the air team, I can't finish the head.
It was like 30, wasn't it? Like 30 vehicles, something like that?
It was 15.
15, yeah.
Oh, like, wow, good lord. Forever. Yeah, that's too many robots for one giant robot.
Well, five is now, enough. In their defense, I would say the part count is probably equivalent to any of the Generation 1 Transformer combiners. You know, I mean, you may have five cars to make the Stunticon combiner Menasor, but with all the little feet and fists and chest plates and face plates and all the rest of that, you're getting up to 15 as it is, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Do you guys collect anything?
Not really. No, not for me. Matt does. Matt collects Funkos. Like going
Funkos, out of business. I used to be Tamashii Monsterized, but they got expensive. So now I'm sticking with NECA or Nika, I guess. Because they're like $20 and pretty high quality.
If I could afford them, I'd get more. I'd have like a movie memorabilia room, you know, like a replica room.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be kind of cool. So I'd have like Gandalf's sword from Lord of the Rings or Luke's lightsaber from Empire, stuff like that. I would just keep in a room. That'd be really cool to show.
Okay, so when you guys go to the cons, you don't have to have that same collector's mentality or anything like that, and you don't get into any of the special exclusives that they have at the cons.
Oh, no. I tried doing that back in my Comic-Con days, and I'm not waiting in line for half a day to get a ticket and then wait another line to hopefully get whatever like merchandise they have there.
Okay, so what's your favorite part of the cons then?
No, I usually, when I go to cons, I just go to meet people and...
Yeah. I'm not a fan of waiting in line. I'm over that. waiting in line for Hall H twice for me like 6 hours, didn't get any either time.
Oh,
so after that, I'm just like, I'm done. Good night.
Never again.
Pretty much.
So did you guys go to San Diego Comic Con this past one?
No, I didn't.
I actually was going like each year for about 13, 14 years, but unfortunately this year I was never able to get an actual ticket in. It was like my first time like in 14 years not going, so it felt kind of weird.
Wow.
Did you ever try going in as the podcast and trying to get like a press pass or something like that so you can interview some people?
They're the only people who never give us press badges.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Everybody else is like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, even WonderCon gave us press badges.
Well, WonderCon's awesome.
Yeah, WonderCon was pretty cool.
I've never been to any of those highfalutin conventions. I'm hoping to go to New York next month or in early October if some magic can be worked behind the scenes between now and then.
Yeah, we are definitely going to New York Comic Con, Greg.
I look forward to that.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
I heard it's pretty cool.
You guys have fun.
Yeah, we will. We will. We always do.
I'm sure I always will. How's that?
Yep. It always holds a special place in my heart because that's where the idea for the podcast came from, was New York Comic Con.
Oh, that's right.
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. Pretty cool.
Very cool.
I'm actually the third co-host of the podcast. So Mark's creation of the podcast predates me by quite a bit, but I do know the basic story. So
You're all caught up.
It's kind of like our story a little bit, huh?
What's that?
But we went through different co-hosts.
Yeah, we did. We, in the early days of the show, we went through like two, three different co-hosts before we finally decided Matt and I were like, you know what, this is going to be you and I.
Yeah, pretty much.
It makes more sense.
It sounds like you guys get along great on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, no, we have a lot of fun. There's a lot of big brother, little brother love, I think, between the two of us.
Yep.
So I'm like much older than Matt, so he...
And taller.
What is the age difference, if I might ask?
I'm 36 and Matt's 30.
Yeah, just barely turned 30.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
So a lot of my 80s references that I'll make go right over his head, and he's kind of looking at me like, the hell are you talking about?
I'm like, I was born 86. I vaguely remember 89.
Yeah.
So that's about the same difference between Greg and I, isn't it, Greg?
I'm 40.
And I'm 47.
Okay, well, there you go.
So, you guys don't look it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, not at all.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Well, we can just stop right there, you know? I'm feeling pretty good about myself.
See, that's what we do. We're spraying positivity throughout the galaxy.
That's right. For blazing positivity. That's
so great. Can I ask where the name Geeks of the Galaxy came from?
Yeah, sure. Well, we were in studio, our old studio, and we were trying to come up with a new name because the show used to be called Full Stream Radio. And at the time, we're like, no one really knows what that means or what that's about.
It was actually a Ghostbusters reference, believe it or not.
Yeah, it was a Ghostbusters reference because there's this line that Deegan always says where he's like, we're going to go full stream. And then I thought that'd be kind of cool way to intro the show. So we'd say, you know, we'd start with that line and then we'd hit the proton charging sound and start the show that way. But no one knew what that meant. No one knew what Full Stream Radio was about. So we decided, okay, well, I love the movie Guardians. Let's just, you know, let's just call it. Well, at the time, I didn't think that was going to be an issue. So
yeah,
we're just like, you know, that sounds really cool. Let's just call ourselves Geeks of the Galaxy and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, haha, we thought. And then, yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, that's pretty clever. It's a good title. I'm like, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. And everybody likes it. So we stuck with it. So that's pretty much how everybody knows us as now.
All right. Was there ever a time where you had a problem with the name of the podcast?
Yes. There's a little company you might have heard of called Marvel. They didn't like our name too much.
Because it sounded too close to Guardians.
Yeah, they thought it was too close to Guardians, but at the same time, it's like we don't even ever talk about Guardians or anything in that capacity. And where they're just like, no, there can only be one of the galaxy. And it's like, but we're not. What?
Yeah, it was a bunch of weird. They're like, their name sounds too familiar. The font looks too similar. We're like, not really,
guys. You find something better to do with your time. So
yeah, they were pretty adamant about it.
Yeah, they were like, no other of the galaxies. Because they're like, if you do it, then everyone's gonna do it. It'll be anarchy. Or just like, really, guys, come on now.
It's like, have you heard the podcast? Well, no. It's like, well, that's your first problem.
There you go.
And can't we all just get along?
Yeah. Right.
Exactly.
Apparently not in the Marvel universe, but, you know.
I have to tell you, this makes me glad that Voltron defends the universe and not the galaxy.
There you go. Could call Voltron for this.
Yeah, I know, right? Taking Marvel down easy.
Yeah, where's their giant robot?
I know, right?
And the movies, they got none.
Oh, in Guardians?
Yeah. No. Not about in the Marvel movie universe.
I know, there's no giant robot. Well, Hulkbuster. That's not really giant, though.
No, that versus not
Voltron.
Giant.
Voltron wins.
But even those were like 30 feet compared to Voltron's what? Like,
he's pretty big, right? Voltron,
like 300 feet or something like that?
Yeah.
That's what they're saying these days. I don't think they ever had a number pinned down back in the 80s, but yeah.
It's at least 180. We know that.
Okay.
It's okay. Big. Right on.
But it's way bigger than Optimus Prime.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, Optimus Prime. Another one of my favorite giant robots.
Why haven't they crossed over?
Voltron and Optimus Prime?
Oh, Transformers and
in Voltron?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, they get stuck in Oh, what's their home planet?
Cybertron
or something like that.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Did you know that the Transformers show actually started exactly 1 week after Voltron started? So it was September 10th, 1984 for Voltron, and then September 17th, 1984 for Transformers.
Wow. I did not know that.
That's hilarious, actually. It's awesome.
And Peter Cullen was on both shows.
That's right.
He was.
That's awesome. He does the intro to the original 84, Matt.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That whole from days of long ago. That's Peter
Cullen. That's right.
In fact, three voice actors who have played Optimus Prime have played characters in Voltron.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, so Peter Cullen played Optimus Prime in the 80s, and he narrated Voltron and played several of the characters. And then Gary Chalk, who was Optimus Prime in Beast Wars, so it'd be Optimus Primal. He was Sky Marshall Wade in Voltron Force in the early 2010s. And then Neil Kaplan, who was Optimus Prime in the mid-2000s, he plays Emperor Zarkon in the new Voltron series, Legendary Defender.
Nice.
Have you guys seen the new show?
Oh, yeah. Seen it all the way through. Can't wait for season two.
That's actually my first exposure to Voltron.
I've
never really seen the original 84 before.
You'd like it.
You might like it.
We're actually planning a Voltron 101 mini episode to help onboard newer fans to what came before, to older fans to what's come after, and to, I guess, friends and spouses of fans who don't know, you know, Voltron from Optimus Prime. So I think that'll be a good onboarding for you, Matt, and anyone.
Well, might be helpful because I watch it. I'm like, okay, you know, I can see where Power Rangers got the influence. I can see maybe where Mechagodzilla got the influence, though. So.
Yeah, but I think Power Rangers came before, at least in Japan, before the 84 Voltron series.
No. Sentai?
It's a complicated story, but the short answer is no.
Okay.
Do share.
The same company created both. So Toei Animation created Voltron.
Mm-hmm.
As Beast King Golion back in like 1981.
Okay.
And it became Voltron in 1984. And then Toei Animation had created Power Rangers right in the early 90s.
Well, okay, it's a little more complex than that. There was a live action series called Super Sentai that Toei co-produced with, I believe, Bandai. And that goes back before 1981. But the seasons of that series that became adapted into Power Rangers are indeed from the early 90s.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I always thought they came out in the 70s for some reason.
Yeah, well, I believe Super Sentai as a program debuted in the 70s.
Oh, okay. Maybe that's what I'm thinking.
I think it was like late 70s. I remember hearing, supposing the story is they did the Japanese Spider-Man, and then they were going to do, I think, a Japanese version of Captain America that ended up turning into what the Super Sentai team kind of is today.
Hmm. Interesting.
And we always had people saying, yeah, Voltron is a ripoff of Power Rangers. Well, it's sort of the opposite, but if it's made by the same company, how can you rip yourself off?
Yeah, exactly.
Besides, Voltron could take down the Megazord.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I said, we've had this discussion actually
on the show. Yeah. Yes, you can quote me on this. Joshua J. from the Geeks of the Galaxy host saying Voltron could whoop Megazord's ass. And I like Power Rangers, so take that.
Okay, cool.
Now, what about the robots from Pacific Rim?
I would love to see that.
Oh, Pacific Rim?
Voltron versus Pacific Rim?
Yeah, the was it the Jaegers?
Voltron would win, dude.
I guess that's true. They really didn't have any superpowers.
You'd take him down.
Yeah.
Easy. And then he'd finish off the giant kaiju.
Here's the main difference between Pacific Rim, Power Rangers, and Voltron. In Power Rangers and in Pacific Rim, all the pilots were in the same cockpit. But in Voltron, each of the pilots are in their own cockpit in the head of their lions.
Yep.
So, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
A distributed control system. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we've all tried to come up with exactly how do the pilots deal with the fact that their arm or their leg is being waved around at an amazing speeds when the sword is coming down on the roe beast and everything. Yeah. And how do they keep from getting, you know, either, you know, air sick or whatever in their cockpit?
They're trained. They're highly trained.
Even
sent
the
by the Alliance
even
to
the
bring
guys?
Back.
Yeah, I'd like to know how anybody sitting in a cockpit with a couple of joysticks and maybe a foot pedal here and there can control a lion to do what a lion does and then do what part of a giant robot does. I just, you know, it's just one of those, okay, yeah, just wave the hands and move on, you know.
So on the new show, did you guys binge them all at once?
No, I don't like to binge. I like to, if I'm really enjoying a show, I kind of like to spread it out so I have something to look forward to.
I kind of binged it. It was more or less like, oh, I'll just watch one episode. Oh, wait, I'm on episode 3. Oh, wait, I go to work. See you guys later.
Nice.
Well, the same thing happened to me that happened on Voltron. Of course, we had already planned that morning to, you know, wake up in the morning. My son and I, we got our cereals out and we sat in front of the TV and we started just watching all 13 episodes in a row, which is really 11 episodes because the first episode was 3 episodes.
Yeah,
thrown into one.
Yeah.
I remember that. I mean, like, hey, it's like an hour long.
I'm hoping, you know, maybe Alara gets to pilot the Blue Lion in the next season, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and then have you guys seen Stranger Things yet?
No, I haven't. Everybody keeps talking about that.
I'm starting to watch it. I'm like, I think I'm halfway through.
Matt said something along the lines of like it's Monster Squad meets like 1980s synthesizer music.
It's,
and everything.
Yeah,
I'm like
Monster,
sold.
It's like Monster Squad mixed with Poltergeist. A little bit of Close Encounters, and I was telling him, like, in an 80s synthesizer of music.
I'm like, sold. I'm going to watch this shit
such,
now.
It is a fun, fun series. Definitely check it out.
Cool. Can't wait to check it out.
Yes, I completely agree. You got to check that out because that was another thing that I just couldn't stop watching.
Yeah.
Once the one episode ended, I had to watch the next one.
Yep, it was great.
So I think they know how to write like that on Netflix. Even with Voltron, I'm like, oh, it'll be like a regular, you know, 20, 30-minute show to where everything's resolved in the episode and that's it. And it's like, they're about to start to fight. Okay, great. Next episode. Ah! I have to watch it now.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love Tyler Labine. He's one of probably my favorite actors.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's great.
I love him as Honk. I didn't realize it was Honk at first. I listened to the voice. I'm like, wait, I know that voice. Oh, my God, it's him. That's amazing.
Yeah, I got a chance to interview him at WonderCon. He's great.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, I loved him on Reaper. That was where my first introduction to him was on that show. And then I followed him on to Deadbeat on Hulu. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, he was on that one alien show, Invasion, for a little bit, too.
Yeah, so, yeah, cool. I'm a big fan of his. I'd love to have him on our show sometime. That'd be great.
Yeah, we're trying to get him on the podcast as well.
Cool. Well, you know, whoever gets him first can pass him off.
Bragging rights.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
exactly.
So when we got together and we said we were going to do this show, we also said, would you guys be interested in reviewing an episode with us?
Yeah, absolutely.
We've been reviewing the episodes in order, and right now we're up to episode 6, Taking Flight.
Cool.
Would you guys care to come along for the ride and comment on it as you see fit?
Absolutely. Sure. Spoiler free, or can we just talk about it?
Oh, you can talk about it as much as you want. Yeah, we do the whole thing. It's like transcript style.
Oh, all right, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I just don't want somebody like tweeting later and be like, man, that guy from Geeks of the Galaxy ruined the episode for me.
No, we're not going to ruin it for everybody. In fact,
oh, okay, cool.
Most of the listeners to this podcast have probably seen the whole series at least 10 to 15 times.
Oh, okay, dang. Good.
I got to catch up with them.
Yeah, I was watching it again last night, and I was just like, God, I love this show. It's so good.
It is great, yeah.
It's so well-written and so well-acted.
Stellar voice cast, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. The only thing I missed is the 80s Voltron theme.
I agree, 100%.
If they could just play that a little bit, maybe just like a few notes, I'd be like, oh, my!
That's what the question that came up at San Diego Comic-Con, and they said basically it's a legal issue and they can't do it.
Oh,
ooh,
bummer.
Yeah, so it doesn't look like we're going to hear any, even half of the original theme at any point.
Oh, I think we'll manage.
That was one of the things, though, I loved about the original show was all the music, not just the Voltron theme, but all the different themes that they used for all the different scenes and stuff. For Planet Doom had its own theme, and the princess even had her own theme. I mean, I thought that was just really great.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You can actually buy the CD, a soundtrack CD of various tracks from the 80s show. It's pretty cool.
You just see Josh's face right now.
Where?
The Voltron store, I believe.
What is it?
The Voltron store?
Voltron.com.
Yeah, store.
Oh,
yeah,
God, I'm just not going to have a bank account anymore after this podcast. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, that's why we're here.
Wife's going to be like, hon, the mortgage is due. No, I have my Voltron jersey. Go away.
And listen to Voltron music.
And the cool thing about Voltron.com is not only do they have the new stuff, but they actually have their own eBay channel, so you can actually get some of the older items as well on Voltron.com.
Uh-oh.
Oh, my
God. Uh-oh. Oh, good night, everybody.
Yeah.
I'm going to form Voltron and never come out of my room again.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say this, but I think I have 7 or 8 tabs, browser tabs, open to different Voltron eBay listings as we speak.
That's awesome. I think I'll start with the jersey that Mark was wearing and kind of go from there.
That's a great place to start.
I was going to buy that. I don't have it myself, but I figure, if we're going to do this New York Comic Con thing, I don't want to look like a clone of Mark,
Yeah. I've been telling Matt, though, for a few months now, I'd love to do like a group cosplay as the original Voltron Force or something current with them, whatever they're doing.
After I saw the show, I'm kind of like, let's get this started.
Yeah. Well, we've already worn spandex once as Daredevil, so I figure this wouldn't be much of a change.
So if you could be any of the characters in the new show, Voltron Legendary Defender, which character would you be for cosplay?
Probably Hunk.
I was going to say, you could pull off Shiro, I think.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought myself more as Hunk. I'm more like the big dude who likes to eat.
Well, I thought myself as Hunk, too, but I'm too short for it.
I'd say Pidge. But male Pidge.
Male Pidge. Maybe.
Yeah. Anyway.
I just need a wig.
I think I'd probably be the Balmera.
That's awesome.
Wow. Actually, I'm hoping shows up on season 2 is Prince Lotor.
Oh, there's a lot of people hoping that.
Yeah.
That'd be cool. I used to love him back on the show, too. He was like my favorite character because he kind of almost had kind of that snidely whiplash voice every time he got defeated. It's like, curses, foiled again by Voltron.
Oh, yeah.
Back to Planet Doom.
And he loved anybody that looked like Allura.
Yeah.
And so, did you guys know that Lotor in the 80s was voiced by Lenny Weinrib, who also voiced H.R. Puffin stuff in the 70s?
Oh, seriously?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Wasn't he also a Thundercat?
I don't believe so.
Or am I thinking someone else? I'm thinking a different Lenny. Maybe. Anyway. That's all right. Moving on.
Okay, so why don't we get started on this episode review?
Let's Absolutely. Do it.
Do it.
We are starting with Voltron Legendary Defender Episode 6, Taking Flight. It was written by Tim Hedrick and directed by Eugene Lee. So we start in the control room of the castle, where the team is waiting to see if Lance will be fine when he comes out of his rejuvenation tank, and they're getting impatient. Oh, by the way, this perspective that they show in this first part, we start hearing and seeing our team from Lance's perspective from inside the tank, so their voices sound muffled a little bit. Hunk says, "I can't tell if he looks healthy or not." Pitch says, "I think his breathing's weird." Keith goes to open the tank and he says, "Oh, come on." And Allura stops him. Allura says, "Not yet. A few more ticks." Keith says, "How much better do you think he's going to get in a few more ticks?" And Pitch says, "And what exactly is a tick?" So they start completely forgetting about Lance. And Allura says, "You know, a time slice." And Shiro says, "Like a second?" Well, now the perspective is out into the room and we see them all talking time measurement with Lance in the background. They've completely forgotten about Lance now. So Allura says, "What is a second?" And Pitch says, "Like this." And Pitch shows her a handheld unit displaying a clock where you see the clock beeping by seconds. And Allura says, "I'm not sure. I think ticks are bigger. Karen, do you have a ticker?"
That's awesome. Great.
That could have been taken a number of ways.
And of course, when you talk about, you know, what is a tick, I'm thinking, it is I, the tick.
Spoon.
Yes. Team with Voltron.
Little wooden boy.
Wasn't he voiced by Patrick Warburton?
He was played by Patrick Warburton in the live action series.
Right.
Townsend Coleman, who was Michelangelo, voiced him on the show.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
So she had asked Karan, "Do you have a ticker?" And Karan comes into view in the foreground at a console, and he says, "Right here, princess." Mm-hmm. So Karan shows a different handheld unit that shows lit-up icons at north, south, east, and west. And as a tick goes by, the next icon lights up in counterclockwise order. So the ticker is beeping. Hunk says, "I think ticks are a little slower." Pitch says, "I can't tell. We'll have to start them at the same time." So they put the units side by side. And Karan says, "Okay, ready? Go." And they're both beeping.
Is it just me, or is this the kind of conversation you can imagine two folks like us doing, you know, how long is a star date anyway? And just having all these crazy conversations about meaningless stuff.
I still, to this day, as a Star Trek fan, have no idea how a star date works.
Yeah, join the club.
Yeah.
And have you guys seen the show Silicon Valley?
No,
I haven't.
I have not.
All right. Well, in Silicon Valley, these guys are working on a very important platform, you know, a piece of software and everything. But there are so many times when they have these side discussions like this that just totally derail them.
Yeah.
So Hunk says, "Yes, I think we're winning." Meanwhile, in the background, we see Lance has woken up and is stepping outside his pod, and no one notices. Keith says, "Winning what?" The cryopod opens. "The intergalactic time measuring competition." Hunk says, "Yes." Lance walks up just behind Hunk. Lance says, "You guys having a clock party?" Hunk says, "Aw, Lance, you just ruined it." And he realizes, "Hey, Lance!" And he gives Lance a huge hug. Lance grunts from Hunk's squeeze and he says, "What happened?" He's still tired and weak. Allura says, "We can tell you all about it when we get you something to eat. Are you able to walk?" Lance says, "Talking? Eating? Are you asking me out on a date?" That would just be his favorite thing for her to say yes to that.
So one day, Lance, one day.
One day.
In the original series, I always thought she was partial to Keith.
Yes. And yeah. and a whole bunch of fans think the same thing.
Cool. Right on, fans.
So Alora folds her arms and looks away and sighs. They are all confirming that Lance is good at the same time. So Shiro says, yep, he's okay. Keith says, classic. And Pidge says, yep, there he is. So the scene changes to Lance sitting at the dinner table and he's eating. And there's a mouse squeaking next to Lance's bowl of green goo. Mm. The team is standing around him. Alora says, he'd be Sendak's prisoner right now if not for Pidge. Pidge says, well, you wouldn't have survived the explosion if Hunk and Karan hadn't gotten a new crystal. Lance says, wow, thanks, everybody. Then he looks at Keith. Sounds like the mice did more than you, though. And, of course, Keith can't take this. He's, like, in disbelief with his arms folded. I punched Sendak. Lance says, yeah, apparently after I emerged from a coma and shot his arm off. And then Keith, with more disbelief, with his arms extended now, we had a bonding moment. I cradled you in my arms. That's one of my favorite lines so far in the series, by the way.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great.
Lance says, nope, don't remember. Didn't happen. So what happened to Sendak? And Alora says, he's frozen in a cryopod. We're keeping him here in the castle. And the camera now pans down to a level below them to Sendak in a cryopod. Lance says, are you sure that's a good idea? Alora says, he's too dangerous to be set free. Besides, we might be able to get some information about Zarkon from him. So now we're back to the dinner table. Lance says, so what's the plan now? Hunk, who's determined, says, we have to get back to the Balmera and save Shay and her people. Lance says, wow, you are really hung up on this lady.
So guys, what did you think of that episode, the Balmera episode?
Is that the one we're just talking about now or the one where they save the Balmera?
The previous episode is where they went there for the very first time.
Oh, and Hunk met Shay and...
Yeah. Right.
It was great. I mean, I loved every episode so thus far. I can't wait for next season. That was awesome.
I love the genuine sci-fi feel of the show, that episode. It had a real kind of a Star Trek thing where, you know, it's something is not as it seems, you know?
No, definitely. No, I thought it was great. I loved when they finally came and rescued the Balmera and Alora used her abilities, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
At this point, after Lance had said, you're really hung up on this lady, the mouse has eaten all of the green goo in Lance's bowl and falls back way larger than before.
Oh, the green goo.
There are these little things that happen in the background in a lot of these scenes that are the comedic moments of the show.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Now, I love the dynamic between Keith and Lance. It cracks me up. Kind of reminds me of me and Matt sometimes.
Actually, yeah, it's true.
Yeah. No, it's a lot of fun. You can tell the writers and the everybody involved in the show really love it, and they're really passionate about making a kick-ass show. So.
Yeah,
and they have. It's amazing.
I mean, they've had other Voltron series follow since the 84 one, but this one is probably my favorite thus far.
Oh yeah, definitely. So Hunk, you know, trying to act like there's no boyfriend-girlfriend thing going on here. He says, no, it's not like that. Look, guys, when you see how Zarkon has treated these people and destroyed their home, they've been under his thumb for so long, they don't know what it is to be free. It's up to us to set this right. This is what being a paladin of Voltron is all about. It's time to man up.
I love that line.
It's a great line, but I on a more serious note, I love that Hunk is fully engaged here. You know, I mean, he's always kind of a, you know, they all have their clown moments, but, you know, Hunk has been kind of he's been a little sheepish and he wants to shy away from some of the action. And this one, he's just full force. We've got to do this. It's the right thing to do. I love that this is his moment.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Yeah, I like to actually go back to save Balmera. Because usually in those shows, like, yeah, we'll come back, don't worry about it. And it's 50 episodes later, and they forgot all about it.
I know, right? Yeah.
Exactly. And Hunk is really the type of guy that you can rely on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
He's an engineer.
Yeah, no, he's awesome.
So while Hunk was saying that, Pidge was watching Hunk with a smile on her face. But as soon as he said, man up, the smile went away. A mouse squeaks, and Shiro says, Then let's get moving. Time to go defend the universe. Everybody starts moving except Pidge. So Pidge says, wait, I have something to say first. I need to come clean. She looks down. And I'm afraid this may change the way you all think about me. Just so there are no secrets between us anymore, I can't man up. Then she looks up. I'm a girl. And we pan back to see Lance's eyes, wide and white, looking like mascara is dripping from both eyes. And he's amazed at Pidge's declaration. I mean, I can man up because that's just a figure of speech. I don't actually have to be a man to man up. I just have to be tough. But what I'm saying, Lance goes, whoa, you're a girl? How? And Pidge jumps as he screams this. So now, as the rest of them react, the music is calm, serene, and peaceful. And I like how it all changed just like that.
Yeah.
Allura says, I've known for some time, but I'm glad you've shared it with everyone. Hunk says, yeah, I figured. Keith says, oh, yeah, me too. Karan says, wait, we were supposed to think you were a boy?
That is one of my favorite lines in the series, at least out of Karan's mouth.
That was, I thought, was a neat little twist that they put on the character.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yes,
for this version.
Yes.
I thought that was pretty cool.
I kind of like all the reaction to all of them except for Lance was like nonchalant, like, oh, yeah, we kind of knew this. And Lance is like, wait, what? Guffaw? Yeah.
I think for him, it's surprise that he hasn't tried to flirt with Pidge yet, you know?
Give it a season.
The last one to react was Shiro.
Mm-hmm.
Says, Pidge, owning who you are is going to make you a better paladin. So Pidge sighs and says, it's good to get that off my chest. Now let's launch this castle ship.
I love this part.
So Lance is still standing there, dumbfounded, and this last word from Pidge is also a revelation. Lance says, wait, what? Pidge is a girl and the castle's a ship? How long have I been out?
Now, I have to tell you, when I first watched this episode, I thought, you know, in prior episodes, they called the control room the bridge. Why is this a surprise to him? But this is that's me being a nitpicker, I guess. But but it's a funny scene. Love it.
Yeah.
It's him being dense to the character, I guess.
Yeah. He had known that the castle had been there for 10,000 years, and there was no reason for him to believe that it actually was a ship that could take off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, when I think bridge, I immediately think, you know, the Enterprise or something. But I guess Lance doesn't.
Yeah.
So this next part is really cool. This is the one that pays homage to the original series.
Yep.
So in the control room, we lock in on the new Balmeric crystal, which powers the ship, and Allura comes into view. A hologram appears around her, and a set of chairs appear from below the floor. Pidge sits down in her chair, and a hologram screen appears in front of her. Two mini consoles appear on each side of Allura, one for each hand. Allura says, activate interlock. And as soon as I heard this for the first time, I'm like, oh, yeah.
Yep.
And then Karan, watching his own hologram, says, dinotherms connected. From outside the castle, you see the lights glow on the castle. Then Allura says, mega thrusters are go.
That should be the tagline for our show.
Yes. Looking now at Karan in the foreground with all the other paladins at their chairs and Allura standing up, Karan says, we are ready to depart planet Eris on your mark, princess.
Yeah, they apparently left out the infracells and they left out let's go castle ship.
Yeah, yeah. That's okay. I'm all right with that.
Yeah,
it works.
I'm hoping they do that at least once in season two where they just do the combined let's go Voltron Force. That would just 80s kid giddiness right there.
Yeah.
At least once. They don't have to do it every episode for season two, but at least one time I'd be
probably
cool.
Probably a good joke somewhere.
Maybe when they go take on Zarkon at the end, they're like, let's go Voltron Force, and they all combine, and that'd be amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we had talked about how in the original series, there were names for these things already. Mm. And, you know, you never knew where these names came from. You know, Blazing Sword and all these other weapons that the Lions used and that Voltron used and stuff like that. And how did they know what to call them?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in this new series, we're seeing them, you know, experience all this for the first time and not knowing what to call them. So it doesn't sound like the original series, and some people, you know, might not understand that, but what would you call it if it was the first time?
Yeah, seriously.
It'll probably be like a joke or conversation down the line, like a next season, be like...
Between Lance and Keith?
Yeah,
what do we call that thing?
It's like, sword blazing needs a sword. What?
Why blazing?
Just get the sword out!
Why does it have to blaze? Just pull the damn thing out!
I mean, some people are even calling it an energy blade.
Yeah.
You know? So, who knows?
It looks a little bit like Zero's blade from Mega Man, but that's a totally obscure reference right there.
I was about to say Gyoken, which is the Go Lion reference, but hey.
All right. You win.
So, Alora says, firing main engines for launch, and a glow is coming down from the crystals surrounding Alora. Outside, you see the four pillars of the castle drop down with dirt falling all around, and the castle launches slowly into the air. All the Arusians are standing around, gasping in awe at the sight. They've never seen this ship move. So the castle ship is now in space, and we move to a new scene at the base ship of Zarkon. Commander Prorok is making a request to Zarkon in his throne room. Hagar is standing to the right of Zarkon. Prorok says, Sire, if capturing Voltron is the Empire's number one priority, then I suggest we begin moving the main fleet towards its last known location post-haste. So Hagar says, Lord, after many years, the Komar experiment is finally ready. Soon, we could have more quintessence at our fingertips than ever imagined. We must test it before moving the fleet. You guys aware of all this quintessence stuff, right?
Yeah, that's like, what is it exactly? It's like bioenergy?
Is it like a life force or like the plant's life force, something like that?
Right.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I sort of think of it as the same kind of MacGuffin as Protoculture from Robotech.
Right.
Okay.
And they somehow found a way to refine it down to, into its most evil form.
Ah.
Makes sense.
There's always an evil form.
Yeah.
No, I'm really hoping he shows up, not to go off track, is Urak. I hope he shows up at some point.
Well, he has. Sendak is effectively Urak.
Oh, really?
Yes. Because in Go Lion, the character was called Sadok.
Oh.
And, yeah. And so if you look at his uniform, his basic styling, he is essentially Urak.
Oh, my God.
His eyepiece. Don't forget his eyepiece.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay. Wow. I have to go back and watch that again. That's awesome.
Okay. Yep.
That's awesome. You guys rock.
So, after Hagar said that we must test it before moving the fleet, Prorok hastily says, We don't have time for any more of your magic. We must move our ships now. Hagar says, Voltron is the most powerful weapon ever created. His puny ships will never be up to the task. We must be well prepared for our next encounter. Now, Hagar says this because she's already lost to Voltron with one of her robe beasts already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she's saying this from experience, and she's right.
Mm-hmm.
So Zarkon slams his hands onto the throne, and it makes a loud echoing sound. I know better than anyone the power of Voltron. Hagar has my trust. We will perform her test.
Now, is that foreshadowing or not?
Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. After seeing, you know, finishing the series. Now I wonder.
Yeah.
So Commander Prorok is now on his own ship, and he's talking to his second in command. He says, The witch has his ear. Keep sending our offer out to any scum between Planet Eris and Balmera X-95 Vox. I'll capture Voltron on my own. So back on the castle ship, Hunk is anxious, and he says, Okay, so when we get there, what do you think? Do we just roll up and start blasting, or do we land and have some kind of public address system like, Attention, Galras, this is Voltron, turn yourselves in. No, blasting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Keith says, Hunk, calm down. And yes, blasting. I love that. So Shiro says, It's our first big rescue mission. He's excited. So Pidge is picking on him like he did with Pidge a while back. Pidge says, excited to see his new girlfriend. And Hunk gasps, "She's not my girlfriend. She's just a rock that I met and I admire very much."
It's a pet rock.
All of a sudden, an alarm starts blaring and Hunk gasps. Shiro says, "What is it? Are we being attacked?" Now, looking at his console hologram, Karan says, "No. It seems to be a distress beacon." Now, Alora, looking at her console, says, "It's coming from a nearby moon. Apparently, a ship has lost power." Pidge says, "I wonder who it is." Hunk says, "Whoever it is, we'll have to wait. Shay has first priority. We can check back on them when we're done." And Alora says, "The Paladin Code states that we must help all those in need." Well, Hunk folds his arms. He doesn't even say anything at this point. I really thought he was going to say something to her again.
Yeah.
But he holds his tongue.
She's kind of right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he doesn't know everything about the Paladin Code yet.
Yeah.
No, they're all still kind of learning. Like you said, it's the kind of their first time being introduced to all this. So.
Yeah.
And Greg, do you remember how we said there was a couple more times where she's mentioned this Paladin Code, and somewhere down the line, we're going to get a book that's basically the Paladin Code, right?
Yeah, we were joking about that being a tie-in book of some kind where, you know, it's sort of like the Ferengi Rules of Acquisition they made back in the 90s. I'm thinking we're going to have this crazy, geeky Paladin Code book or something.
Why hasn't Devin done that yet?
Yeah,
there's even a bro code for How Much a Mother book.
In Star Wars, they've already made the Jedi Path.
Wow.
Have they really?
Wow.
Yeah. And it's a book made by Jedi for other Jedi.
Of the Jedi, by the Jedi, for the Jedi.
There was a census, I think, at one point where a lot of people actually classified their religion as Jedi.
Where did I say
yes.
That?
Yeah.
And a lot of them were Australians, weren't they?
Yes, they were. So. Yeah. That's hilarious. Hey, you know what? Everybody's got to believe in something. I believe in Voltron.
Okay, there you go.
I don't pray to him.
Voltron, save me!
Save me, almighty robotic savior!
We just said that there were a lot of people who would like the phrase, keep calm and form Voltron.
Yeah.
I want that on a shirt.
That's what a lot of people would like.
That should be a shirt.
Come in all the various colors of the lions would be awesome.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the story.
Yes.
Lance says, "Wow, this is so cool. It's like we're space cops on space patrol." Karan, do we have a siren we can turn on? Karan says, "No, but we could record you making a siren noise and broadcast that to them." Lance says, "Perfect." And Shiro puts his hand over Lance's mouth very quickly and says, "No, not doing that." That reminded me of the time when he declared to Karan he wasn't eating what Karan wanted him to eat.
Mm.
And pretty much when Shiro says those things, that's his final word on that. So the castle ship is now headed towards the moon, identified in the distress signal, and Hunk doesn't get his way. So as they're about to land near a ship on the moon, there are two people and a droid sitting next to a campfire when they are startled by this new ship arriving. Alora says over the speakers, "Attention, damaged craft. This is Princess Alora. We are coming to assist you." So the castle ship turns upright and lands in the same form that it had on Eris. Rolo, who's the male figure that's on the planet, says, "Whoa, nice ship." Inside the castle ship, Alora looks toward Karan and says, "Stay aboard and try to get as many of our systems clear of that Galra crystal energy as you can. We'll see who hailed us." Karan says, "Yes, princess." And a small pod drops from the castle ship and out walk Alora and the paladins. And Rolo says, "You don't know how glad we are to see some friendly faces. Most folks don't want to get tangled up with anyone who's on the run from the Galra." And Keith says, "So you guys are fighting the Galra?" Rolo says, "Well, I don't think Zarkon is exactly quaking in his boots at the three of us, but we do what we can." "I'm Rolo, this is Naima, and our cyber unit, Beezer." Now, at this introduction, you're going to see a couple of different perspectives here. When Naima says hi, that's just a simple hi to everyone else. But to Lance, she's got sparkles all around. Everything's moving in slow motion. And this is Lance's vision of her. Apparently, he's obviously attracted to Naima, and he sighs. Then they show Beezer with sparkles all around. And this is Pidge's vision, and she's obviously fascinated with Beezer. And Beezer's beeping, and Pidge gasps, "Cool robot." So Lance says, "Hi, name's Lance." Sparkles all around him as he says this. I can just hear Lauren Montgomery saying, "More sparkles, more sparkles." So Shiro says, "Was your ship damaged in a fight?" And Rollo says, "Yeah, we've really been through it with the Galra. Parts are hard to come by. Luckily, we were able to limp to this moon about a week ago. If you didn't pick up our distress signal, Alora says, "We're happy to help. I am Princess Alora of Altea, and from now on, you won't be alone fighting the Galra." Now, a sound of a sword leaving its sheath and the visual of a ray of light moving across Shiro's helmet as she says, "You'll have the Paladins of Voltron by your side." Well, Rollo lets out a breath, and as Lance is laughing and trying to impress Naima, and Pidge is playing with Beezer, Rollo's not very impressed by the Paladins so much here. And he just says, "Okay." Shiro says, "I don't think they've heard of us." So Keith says, "Well, it has been 10,000 years. And Lance looks over at Rollo. "Voltron? Five robot lines that combine into this big robot guy?" And he makes hand gestures to show a big robot. Rollo says, "Sounds impressive. I'd love to see it." Or him. Them. He doesn't know what to call it. Well, Hunk, you know, we're back to Hunk here. He's obviously in a hurry.
Yeah.
Hunk says, "Why don't we get to work on your ship? I'm sure we all have places to be." Rollo says, "Sure." He opens up his ship as we look out from inside the ship to the rest of them looking at it. Pretty much our whole Flaxum assembly is shot. I don't know what kind of extra parts you carry on this rig of yours. I've never seen anything quite like it. So now they're showing Alora in the foreground with Lance, Shiro, and Naima in the background. Lance is flexing his muscles in front of Naima, and Shiro hits him to stop. So Alora says, "I'm sure we can get you back up and running. Give Hunk a list of what you need. Karan can show you where to find it." Hunk says, "Okay." Rollo says, "We'll go with you. Don't want you to have to carry that all by yourself. Come on, guys." Well, Hunk puts his hand up and stops him in his tracks. "I don't think so." Folds his arms and says, "You can just wait out here."
Isn't it interesting that Hunk is the serious one who's, security-minded and all mission-focused and all this. This is quite a change for him. I mean, you know, he's a little bit of a clown, and I really like this turn of his character.
Mm-hmm. Same playing smart now.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Right.
Plus, he's got a girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right, come on. Wouldn't that want you to hurry things up a little bit?
Yeah, all right.
Let her away from me, yeah.
So Alora says, "Hunk, don't be rude." And Lance says, "Yeah, mind your manners. There are ladies present."
Nah.
And he does that tongue click and says, "Hey." And he's pointing his fingers at Naima. Shiro just sighs. Hunk, who's not worried in the least that he's defying Alora at this point. "Oh, I'm sorry, but does anyone remember the last time we let our defenses down? Someone kind of set off a bomb. Remember, Lance? You were almost killed." Lance says, "Oh, yeah." How soon they forget, huh? Well, Shiro steps forward. "Hunk's right. Sorry, but we have to be cautious." And Rollo says, "Hey, I don't take it personal." Beezer starts printing out the parts list. "That's how it is out here. You've got to look out for your own. You're doing a good job, big man." So Hunk says, "Yeah, thanks." And he takes the list and looks at it. Now we're at a new scene in front of the campfire. A little bit later, Rollo is saying, "My planet was destroyed by the Galra, and I was taken captive. I managed to escape, but not before I lost something. And he points to the metal on his left leg. His left leg is now just metal. And Shiro, with his arm whirring, says, I know exactly how that feels.
Hmm.
What do you guys think of Shiro's right arm and everything? How he acquired it?
It's pretty crazy. I think it's awesome. I always like when like the villains try to create like someone to fight for them and ends up kind of turning against them and using those abilities. I always thought that's kind of a cool character twist.
Yeah, and Hagar had said, you could have been our greatest champion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's always
it does make
cool.
you wonder exactly what in the heck happened during that year when he was gone and modified and all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're still waiting on a lot of that backstory.
Yeah. No, I thought it was awesome. I look forward to seeing what happens. Because I remember on the original series, Sven ends up getting taken out by Hagar, and that's why Laura has to take over. So it'd be interesting to see if that same thing maybe happens next season.
Yeah,
well, the way they teased it at San Diego Comic-Con, they're making it look like something's going to happen to Shiro.
Ooh.
I hope not. I'm really digging his character. Yeah. So, yeah. But
right. So are we.
Me too.
At the same time, I really want to see Princess Laura fly the Blue Lion. So I'm like, choices.
Yeah.
Voltron geek choices, you know. Do I lose Shiro or do I get to see the awesomeness of the princess flying the Blue Lion and they all, whatever.
Yeah. So I got to tell you, my Voltron geek thing is that this character, the leader of this posse called Rolo, every time I hear the term Rolo, now this is super geek, I think of Wolo, who was one of the pilots of Vehicle Voltron. Now, how's that for geeky?
Nice.
Wow.
I think he trumps me, man.
Brady's knowledge?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Or at least geek knowledge.
At this point, Hunk comes over and he's pulling a big box full of parts. Hunk says, well, I hope there are some parts in here that'll fit. No one moves. They're all still motionless by the fire. And he says, you know, to get your ship moving. And he's getting more impatient. Rolo says, great, thanks. Now, Pidge is laughing and riding Beezer as Laura sits down to ask Rolo a question. Alora says, so what can you tell us about Zarkon's forces? Where are they concentrated? Now, Pidge is still riding behind Rolo now, going around in a circle. Rolo says, well, his command ship sits right in the center of the Empire. He mostly calls the shots from there and has his minions do the work, depending on who's closest. This is the territory of a real nasty bugger named Sendak. Keith says, oh, we've met. Now, why do you think they don't tell them that they have Sendak locked in their ship in a cryopod?
Don't know who these guys are. Can't necessarily trust them. Maybe they'll bust them out.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, as we find out later in the episode, they end up being, you know.
Not trustworthy.
Not trustworthy at all. And
not trustworthy.
You got a lion and now you got a Galra commander. You know, why not? Here's the whole five set. Enjoy, sir.
Right.
You have to wait in line at Comic-Con for him.
So Shiro says, how far are we from the center? Rolo says, we're way out on the fringes. Now, Hunk's really impatient now. He says, hey, sorry to interrupt, but I think you guys are kind of keeping Rolo from working. It's just that we're in a hurry. A hero named Shay saved my life, and I swore I would return to do the same for her and her people. You understand. Rolo says, sure, sorry. He doesn't really seem sorry or in a hurry.
No.
So Rolo opens up the box and grabs some items from it, examining them. And Shiro, to only Hunk now, keeping their voices down, says, Hunk, we're going to get going soon, but I think Rolo might have some information that could be helpful to us. And Hunk says, not for nothing, but I don't trust this guy as far as I can throw him. We ought to leave him with parts and just say, adios, amigo. Now, Pidge is still playing with Beezer. And Rolo says to Hunk, hey, bud, sorry, but do you think you could hunt down a length of thermal pipe about yay long? Hunk groans, on the way. So Shiro says to Rolo, so are there more freedom fighters, any kind of organized resistance to the Galra? Rolo says, only folks who haven't been colonized yet, or the lucky few like us who managed to escape somehow. Keith says confidently, well, we're going to change all that. Well, Rolo, again, not impressed, says, that's good to hear, but I've got to warn you, it's pretty bad out there. You don't know what you're up against. and he turns to the box again, and they just stare at him. Over by another crate, Lance is talking to Naima, and he says, I mean, there are only 5 of us in the entire universe, so I guess you could say it's kind of a big deal. So Naima says, I don't understand. The lions are ships? Are they like flying statues that you ride on? Well, maybe to the Voltron collectors they might be.
No, no, don't take it out of the box.
No! It's not worth anything now.
But then how do you connect them together?
I know, right?
And how does it fly while it's still in the box?
Oh, good point, good point.
That's exactly. Right, yeah.
So Lance says, no, 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 they're magic. But also super scientific and advanced. And now they're showing images of the lions flying using their mouth and tail weapons. And he says, and they fly crazy fast and have all these incredible weapons. Really, the entire castle is just insane. I wish you could see it. Mm. Naima says longingly, yes, it's too bad we're not allowed inside.
Mm-hmm.
I would love a tour from one of the knights. But I guess the big one is in charge, huh? You have to obey his orders. Wow, she's really laying it on him.
Like, yeah, he's right. Getting played very nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he says, who, Hunk? He scoffs. I don't have to listen to him. He pulls her off the box and in the direction of the ship. And Naima giggles. On the ship, in the control room, Naima gasps. She says, this place is incredible. Lance says, yeah, I guess. You get used to it. But Naima says, but it's so gigantic. It must take you forever to get to your lion. Lance says, ooh, you'd be surprised. And he snickers and smiles. Then you see them both on the zip line. Naima is holding on to Lance, who's holding on to the zip line. They're both laughing and cheering. And she leans her head in his back and he says, huh? Now they're both cheering as they get down towards the cockpit, and the chair moves up into the console with Lance sitting on Naima's lap. Lance says, pretty slick, right? Naima says, unbelievable. Take me on a ride around the moon? Lance finally starts to get some of his sense back. He says, we should probably get back to the others. Well, that quickly changes because Naima says, yeah, you're right. Maybe Keith will give me a ride.
Oh.
Boom.
Look out.
Lance shudders and vibrates at the sound of this. He kicks the controls to start the line and touches the console. He's not going to take any of that Keith stuff. Nope. So Lance says, nope, hold on a second. I mean, what's the point of having the line if you can't enjoy it, right? Giddy up, buddy. The lion takes off from the castle ship and disappears like it went into light speed. Mm. Well, Hunk is looking up at this, and he takes off his goggles, and he goes, oh, Lance. Mm. Rolo says, aw, let them have their fun. Thanks to you, this thing is just about ready, so we're going to be on our way soon. And he looks at the old part, and he says, too many light years on that guy, I guess. Well, Hunk looks at it, and he says, yeah, and he's not convinced. So back on Zarkon's base ship, Hagar is preparing for a ritual over a large circular opening where you can see the planet below. 4 sides come together to meet in the center of the circle. Hagar says, begin the ritual. The circle lights up purple. Druids of the 4 directions, join us. Purple lasers shoot from 4 different purple crystals at the center crystal, larger than the other 4, and it lights up bright purple. Now Hagar is yelling. You see a black mass ignite the sides and center of the circle, and sparkly dots and beams float down to the planet and pull up a bright blue light from all over the planet and up into the ship. They are extracting the planet's quintessence. Hagar says to Zarkon, the Komar experiment was a success. We have gained an entire planet's quintessence, a feat that it would normally taken us years. So Zarkon looks at the whole quintessence of the planet that has been captured into a container on the ship. And he says, most impressive. This will revolutionize the way we advance throughout the galaxy. Mining and colonizing planets is a thing of the past. With this much power available at our whim, we can now spend all of our time hunting down and capturing Voltron.
Yeah, the only thing that would make this more effective is if they stored the quintessence in Energon cubes.
Have them stacked.
Yeah, I know, right? Soundwave's out there barking orders.
Yeah.
Now we're crossing a lot of it.
Streams?
Don't cross the streams.
At least, especially in the men's room.
So now we're back to Lance and Naima again. They're flying Blue Lion over a lake on the other side of the moon. Naima says, "Look, a kinetic spring. Let's land over there. The minerals reflect off the water, making a rainbow." So the lion flies over top of the water, and it appears just like a rainbow. Lance says, "Wow, is there anything you don't know?" She touches her bracelet, and it boops and a light blinks. Rolo looks at his wrist at the same time, and he's got the same bracelet, which is now blinking. Rolo grunts, and then all of a sudden, he's in a tremendous hurry. "I think this thing is just about ready for a test flight. Beezer, come co-pilot for me." Beezer bleeps, and then, "Be back in a tick." So Hunk looks up perplexed, and the ship takes off, just like that. So they really, really do think he's actually going to be back, like this is some kind of test drive.
Yeah.
I kind of would have thought that was kind of strange compared to how he was acting before.
Yeah, I've been like, is he coming back? I don't know for sure.
So now they're in front of a tree, and Lance and Naima are near Blue Lion. And Lance says to Naima, "Sir, do you want to see how fast I can climb this tree?" Like, this is how far it's gone. I mean, not only has he taken her into the ship, which he wasn't supposed to do, then he took her into the lion, he wasn't supposed to do, took her out of the lion and it, you know, to another part of the planet, and he's just climbing a tree now? You still don't think you should get back to the others?
Nope.
Wow.
Kind of impressive.
Right.
So Naima is giggling and says, "Aw, you are cute. Let me show you something. Give me your hand." Lance winces and grunts loud as she grabs his hand, places a magnetic handcuff around his hand that ratchets around the tree, and ties both of his hands together, tying him to it. Lance says, "Whoa, this is kind of..." And how would you finish that sentence?
Inky?
Yeah.
That's what he's thinking.
Moving fast.
Yeah. Move fast, don't you? Kind of like that.
But as Rolo's ship starts to come down on top of them, Beezer's beeping. Rolo opens the bay doors on Rolo's ship, which puts Blue Lion in a force field and pulls it up into their ship.
Whoops.
He's stealing Blue Lion.
No.
Cast of Voltron.
So Lance says, "Naima, what's going on?" Duh. So a rope comes down with a foot stirrup, lowers down from the ship, and Naima gets on it and says, "Sorry, Lance, maybe we'll meet again." And she's pulled up into the ship, and it takes off, leaving Lance there all alone. So Lance is now whining. He sees his helmet is too far out of reach, and he says, "Oh, Quiznak." So what do you guys think of the swear word here on Voltron? Quiznak.
It's funny.
I'm loving the swear words we got over here.
Yeah,
there's Quiznak, and there's someone else too. They said like in the second or third episode, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, no, Quiznak's funny.
I keep thinking of Quiznos, those toasty subs they made about 10 or 15 years ago.
That sounds good.
Meatball.
Mm. Toasty.
Mm.
Well, I can't help but thinking that Sendak's name is part of this. If Quiznak and Sendak, you know, are there any parts of words that might, you know, mean something bad?
I don't know, but we all know that purple is evil.
Yeah.
As we established earlier, purple is evil.
Mm.
Yeah.
So back on the castle ship now, the paladins are still waiting for Rolo to get back from his test drive. His test drive, right?
Yeah.
Quote, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Pidge says, "How many ticks have they been gone?" She's already starting to talk in ticks instead of seconds. So Alora says, "I don't know. I hope they didn't break down again."
Mm-hmm.
That sounds a little bit naive, doesn't it?
Right.
Well, Hunk says something ain't right. So now back to Lance. Lance is straining with his full body extended and his hands still tied to the tree. He manages to get his helmet up with his foot and place it near his face. So he talks through the comm in the helmet and he says, "Guys, hello, little help." Shiro says, Lance, are you all right? What's going on?" Lance says, "Well, I'm kind of chained to a tree." Hunk says, "I knew it," and he gets his arms crossed. Then Lance says, "I think Naima and Rollo just stole the blue lion." Now Hunk is furious, and he says, "I knew it!" He clenches his fists in rage and throws them to both sides. Shiro says, "Where are they?" Lance says, space? I mean, where would you describe? I'm tied to a tree. Where do you think they went?
Yeah, exactly. Up and to the left?
Yeah.
Towards the stars?
So, what do you guys think of the split screens that they do every once in a while?
They're pretty fun, actually.
Yeah, they're clever. It's a nice device they use.
My favorite is the first regular length episode where they're trying to learn how to form Voltron, and they have the whole
Are we still enthusiastic about it? Okay.
Yeah right.
Well, we're back to seeing a five-way split screen here, and Hunk says, "I never trusted those guys right from the beginning." Now they go to Hunk continuing while he zip lines to Yellow Lion. "I mean, at first it was just like a feeling in my gut, you know, but when I was replacing that pipe, the pipe was cracked, but none of the hardware around it was damaged." Keith says over the comm, "Okay, we get it." Hunk now drops into his chair, taking him to his cockpit. Hunk says, "I mean, if the thermal pipe is cracked, then obviously, hello, the entire assembly should be totally roasted." Another five-way split screen, this time with all five paladins and Lance still tied to the tree. Keith says, "Okay, we get it." And now in his lion, he says, "We should have had to replace the entire undercarriage of that reactor. So right then, I was like, positive, foul play." So you see his holographic console light up, and they all say at the same time, "Okay, we get it." So the four lions take off from the castle ship with the lions roaring. In Rollo's ship, Rollo contacts Commander Prorok. Rollo says, "Commander Prorok, my name is Rollo. I understand you're offering a reward to anyone helping capture the Voltron Lions." Prorok says, "That's correct. Do you know where they are?" Rollo says, "I know where the blue one is. It's in my ship." Prorok says, "Excellent. Bring it to me and you'll have your reward immediately." Rollo says, "Just a tick. My friends and I have a bit of a checkered past. Some stolen merchandise from the Galra Empire may have fallen into our possession without us knowing about it." Yeah, without us knowing about it.
Just like a bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Prorok says, "Well, I'm sure that a full pardon can be arranged for the brave souls who bring Emperor Zarkon a Voltron lion. Is that all?" Naima says, "We'll take the reward, too." Prorok says, "Of course." So Rollo says, "All right, we're on our way." He grunts and bones crack as he stretches both hands. "I almost feel sorry for those Voltron folks. Seemed like a nice bunch." Naima says, "If you're feeling guilty, you can turn yourself in. Stealing from Zarkon carries a life sentence." And then we see their ship fly into deep space. Rollo says, "They don't seem that nice." On Prorok's ship, we see Prorok say to his second in command, "Send the nearest fighter squadron to the area of the transmission. I'm not trusting some bounty hunter with our prize." On Rollo's ship, the alarm starts blaring. Naima says, "Huh? The lions are approaching." Lions are growling, and Rollo says, "No way." He can't believe they caught up so quickly. Naima says, "Are you sure you know what you're doing? There's no way we can outrun those lions." Rollo says, "Not in the open. Good thing the Zorlar asteroid belt is right up here, and I know it like the back of my hand." So they head into the asteroid belt. Pidge says, we'll never get through this asteroid field. Hunk says, maybe I can just bust through. And he starts to yell, and then the lion, yellow lion, hits an asteroid head on, and it just causes the rocks to hit each other and move around more. Nope, that was wrong. That was a bad idea.
Is it just me, or when they talk about, you know, not being able to get through the asteroid field, did anyone else think of C-3PO saying the odds of successfully navigating an asteroid belt are 3,720 to 1?
That's right.
I think just you, but I did think of the asteroid field from Empire. Yeah. For
never
sure.
Told okay. Me the odds.
Yeah, that could have been a line from Lance or Keith. That would have been great.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then I remembered the asteroid field from when Jango Fett was going after Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Asteroids seem to be a running thing in Star Wars.
Yes.
It is Star Wars.
And loss of limbs.
Yes.
The Skywalker family tradition.
It really is.
No doubt.
Stuck on a desert planet, lose an arm.
Yeah. Fall in lava, become emperor of an evil empire.
So now we see another split screen with Shiro and Keith this time. Shiro says to Keith, Keith, you're the only one who could possibly fly through this. We need you, buddy. Get in there and flush him out. Now, do you know why he said Keith was the only one?
I don't.
Because when they first got their lions, they talked about how Red Lion was the most agile of all the lions.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it needs to have a pilot that you know, is just as agile. So, you know, Keith and Red Lion together are basically the only ones that can do this.
Cool.
So Keith says, you got it. See you on the other side. And his computer beeps. Keith flies through, dodging and weaving. He runs across a bigger rock and pushes the thrusters hard as he catches up to Rolo's ship. Rolo sees Keith and says, no way. Get on the blasters. Take him down. Naima says, copy.
Cool little sequence, actually.
Yeah, it is.
This is actually pretty cool. You don't see flying lions, little flying lion, like going, weaving in and out and jumping off of asteroids.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
I think the show stages the hand-to-hand combat scenes really, really well. And it's cool to see that they can do the same with these space scenes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Heck yeah.
For sure.
Now, you have to understand here that Keith going after them, Blue Lion is inside this ship, so he doesn't want to destroy the ship.
Yeah.
No, is he not?
So he's got to be careful, but with blasters backing out the back of their ship, Keith avoids all of them, and he fires back, but misses. And Rolo says, this kid can flat out fly.
Mm.
Well, Keith gets even closer, and Naima says, he's gaining on you. Rolo grunts, and then he maneuvers some more. Keith sends a boomerang from Red Lion that takes out the blasters on Rolo's ship. Electricity crackles, and Naima says, blasters are offline. Rolo says, we've got to get out of here. The ship hits the thrusters, then the lion growls and Keith hits them with a blast. Rolo groans. Keith grabs onto the ship with Red Lion's claws and pulls the ship in while the other lions appear outside the ship and growl.
Mm-hmm.
Rolo grunts and gives up. So Keith says, yeah! And he chuckles and says, hey, Lance, I got your lion back. Lance is still tied up to the tree. So Lance says, thank you, Keith. Now can you come and unchain me? So we split screen with Keith and Lance. What's that? You're cutting out. I can't hear you. Then we see a scene outside where the lions and Rolo's ship in space. And Lance is saying, oh, come on. I thought we bonded. Keith? Buddy? My man? Yeah. So back on the moon, Keith says to Rolo, since your ship doesn't really work now, you'll have to wait here for a rescue. Rolo says, thanks for sparing our lives. And Hunk says, now that these guys are dealt with, let's get back to the Balmera and save Shay and her family. Rolo says, you may not believe this, but I hope you do stop Zarkon. It's a lifetime of fighting the Galra that led me to where I am today. Now to finish the episode, we're back on Zarkon's base ship. And Hagar, who's looking at a chameleon-type monster, says, all this quintessence will turn you into the strongest, most horrifying fighter ever created. One that even Voltron will not be able to defeat.
Ooh.
And then we see the end credits.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's what they get you.
Yep.
Now, as we did in the last episode, we want to give the credit to those additional voices that we heard in this episode. So, Rollo was played by Norman Reedus.
Yeah.
Cool.
Isn't that awesome?
Who we all know from The Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Naima was played by Lacey Chabert, who was in Mean Girls and Lost in Space.
Oh, really?
In Party of Five.
Yeah, in Party of Five.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
She was also the first Meg on Family Guy.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Right.
Yeah.
Before Mila Kunis. And then Commander Prorok was played by Keith Ferguson, who is also our King Alfor, and he played Han Solo in the Lego movie.
Oh, cool.
Ah, that's awesome.
And of course, Zarkon is played by Neil Kaplan and Hagar by Cree Summer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that chick. She's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
She does like everything.
Mm-hmm. It's been around forever. Yeah,
I first remember hearing her voice back in Inspector Gadget. She was
pink. Yeah.
Wow. That's true.
Yep. Uncle Gadget.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
With the era MacBook and
Apple Watch. That's right. Oh, my God. That's right.
One of my favorite roles by Cree Summer was in Drawn Together.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember that animated show?
Foxy Love,
right.
Oh, and she was Max from Batman Beyond.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it's always good to see who were the guest voices in those episodes, and we had some pretty big ones there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing more of Hagar than just have her, you know, stand around by Zarkon's side. When you see her do this wicked stuff, I'm really looking forward to seeing whatever's in store in the next season with her.
Totally.
They did a lot with her this season, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know. Well,
They did.
And there's an episode coming up that we haven't reviewed yet, but it's the one where she gets in front of Shiro and she starts to duplicate herself and clone herself.
Yeah.
And it reminds us of the Sven character from the original series and what had happened to him at the time.
Yeah.
Space Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
Space Hospital.
Yeah, no, that's true. There is that. You know, you haven't seen this episode map, but like in the original series, that's the point where Sven gets taken out and Laura takes over in the original series because Hagar does that whole split thing. And,
oh, okay.
So.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I know the Space Hospital joke, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the original Voltron, Sven is severely injured and has to be taken to some planet, a space hospital. And
it's a medical planet.
A medical planet. And so he's gone for a long, long, long time. Princess Allura takes over. He shows up later in the series and da-da-da-da-da. But in the original anime, in Beast King Go Lion, the character who's called Takashi Shirogane actually is killed in the conflict with the Hagar character.
Hmm.
I like to pronounce it Shirogane.
Cool.
Okay.
Want to fight?
I'm just thinking how they pronounced it in Go Lion itself, but that's okay.
Okay, that's all right.
Wrestle about it.
You say potato, I say potato, yeah.
At least we're not calling Keith Cogain, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Cogain for balding man across the universe.
Like Rogaine.
Will there be all baldness in the future? I don't know.
Yeah,
maybe. Hey, well, if you're bald in the future, apparently you can captain starships, so win.
There you go.
Indeed.
And a red shirt.
Yeah.
And not die.
Damn right.
So I want to thank you guys for joining us for an episode review of Ultron Legendary Defender.
Thank you guys for having us on. I mean, it's been great.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Sorry?
We never stop having fun when it comes to Voltron.
Oh, I know. It's my favorite. Always will be.
We'd love to spend some more time with you guys in the future, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, of course.
Let us know when he wants to come back.
Or maybe we could come on your podcast.
That works too. Yeah.
Yeah.
That
works.
It's a win-win.
Yeah.
So that would be fun.
That would be amazing. Yeah. We'll work something out and we'll have you on. We could do this, what we're doing right now. So that'll work.
Cool. Podcast Force.
Yeah, right.
Nice.
Ultron Podcast Force, go.
The way we usually do it when we end one of these podcasts is we say, we'll see you all next time on, and then everybody at the same time says, let's Voltron.
That's awesome. Let's do it.
We'll see you all next time on
Let's Voltron.